Hello, everybody. It's Jake Sanzano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is the founder and CEO of Lightspeed VT. He has helped numerous companies and individuals generate millions, and he will be joining us on stage, Gino, in October for Multifamily Mastery 6. So without further ado, Brad Lee, welcome to the show.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
You're doing great, brother.
Doing good. Our pleasure to have you here. Now, we're on a call today. We do a Monday class, and they were talking about origin stories. So I guess that's where we start this thing off. Want to get to know you a little bit better and your background and how you got started in business.
Well, I'm used to answering questions. So if you have any, I'd be happy to answer them. If you just want me to tell a story.
Dude, that's what it's all about. So we had this guy and it's about emotions, not facts. All right. Cause he says that's what sells. And so the question, to be a little bit more formal, sir, is how did you get started in business? And they were calling it an origin story. So I was being cute, but please feel free to take it away.
Well, again, I mean, you know, my origin, you know, is way back here. When I started business, I was already 30 years old.
He said the key to it was starting at 10 years old too, by the way. So I'm not going to get too formal with you here, but.
Well, you guys might have false information because I think originally it probably started when I was 6 years old.
I got you.
Maybe going on seven. You know, it was the day I was touched by Elvis, probably. So a lot of people say, Brad, what do you mean by that? You know, well, I literally was touched by Elvis, not in a bad way, by the way. Nowadays,
not in the weird Michael Jackson way that we're hearing today, right?
Not in Michael Jackson way. But my dad and I were on the way to the mall. It was probably, I think it was November 1970, let's say six. November 1976, on the way to the mall in my dad's LTD, Ford LTD. I was right in the back seat, no seat belt, like I was dangerous, 6 or 7 years old, living free. This was back when only men had balls. You know what I'm saying?
Those were the days, huh?
Yeah, so my dad pulls over, sees a little commotion over at the hotel, pulls over, finds out we got Elvis Presley in the building. Elvis was there for some sort of concert. So we stumble across where he's staying. So my dad says, you want to go meet Elvis? I'm like, well, absolutely. Let's go meet Elvis. I mean, this is the king, remember? So we got out, we walked inside, and there was a big old crowd of people being stopped. And ultimately I was going in to meet Elvis with my dad. But then my dad looked over, he said, we can't go meet Elvis. I'm like, why not? He says, look, they're stopping everybody. So I look over, and instead of me seeing the guards and the ropes and the problem, I looked over, and as soon as I did, man, I just saw a clear path right through people's legs to his room, you know? And I literally just walked over, went right through everybody's legs, right underneath the velvet rope, right down to the suite door, and boom, the door opens. There's Elvis. Walks out, and two bodyguards, by the way. Walks out, taps me on the head, basically pats me on the head, and says, how you doing, little man? Turns around and walks away. Now, what's the moral of that story? Sometimes you got to look for opportunity, not the problem. See, too many people were looking at the guards and the signs. You know, I didn't even see the guards and the signs. I saw the path. See, and I took it. And by the way, I went right underneath the rope. No one, guards didn't do anything about it. But anyway, that's the origin story. Elvis touching me on my head. That was the
He's been blessed, Gino. He's been blessed by the king.
And also died when I was 2 years old, came back to life. So I might have been blessed by God then, because again, I got a second chance. So then I got touched by Elvis. Then the school sent me packing with these candy bars called World's Finest Chocolate. I was looking around like I had some still. World's Finest Chocolate. And I was supposed to go sell those door to door. And so I literally took this box of chocolate home. My parents were kind of, you know, blue collar workers. They weren't real into, you know, the sports life or anything like that. So I went home, and instead of selling it to my family like they wanted me to at school, my brothers ate them and I had to go sell some. So I started knocking on doors. Turned out I learned I was a good salesperson. So that's really when it started.
So is that why you dropped out of high school and wanted to become a movie star because of the Elvis thing? Did you get touched by that, or why did that happen?
No, I dropped out of high school because my dad kicked me out of my house for not mowing the lawn like I said I would. So he drank sometimes, and when he got drunk, he was a little bit mean sometimes. Sometimes real happy, sometimes real mean. So he came home one day drunk, and he said, "Thought I told you to mow the lawn." And I said, "I forgot." And he looked at me with those eyes, the mean eyes, and he said, "I think it's time you hit the effing road, slick." No, he said, I think it's
How
time
old were you?
16.
Poof.
He said, "I think it's time you hit the fucking road." That's exactly what he said. And then he looked at my friend that was with me, Brian Walker, and he said, "You too, slick." And freaking, we went like this. And thankfully, you know, my buddy was there with a car. So I'm like, let me grab a bag. So I grabbed a bag of clothes, went with my buddy, and never went back. Now, I was still supposedly enrolled in high school, and I was supposed to show up for school. So I got up and went to school, and after about a week of living on couches and hanging out, you know, I'm like, dude, we can go to LA and freaking become movie stars. Like, what are we doing in high school? And I had no parental advice or guidance to say that's a stupid idea. So I quit school. But anyway,
that's, did you land any roles at least?
Of course I did.
Of course he did. He's a fighter, Gino. He made it happen, big man.
Yeah, I mean, I got a couple of parts here and there in the beginning. You know, then I got a starring role in a movie 3 days before production. The producer's son got out of a drug rehab, and the producer literally gave that dude my part not in exchange, but as a reward. So, you know, I learned nepotism a long time ago, and I thought to myself, I'm going to go become a millionaire so I can be the producer. Right. That taught me. So the guy with the money calls the shots on the movies, and they can change anything they want. And so I said, well, let me go get the money. So I'm the guy with the money, and no one can call that shot ever again. So I went to go get rich, and I'll be right back type of thing. Like, I was like, you know, hey, I'll see you guys soon. I'll be right back. I'm gonna go get rich real quick. I'll come right back and make some movies.
And then what was
hold
that
on,
next?
Gina, hold on. We got to pause it here for a second, because I feel like the story's coming full circle here. Are you going back into movies or what?
Well, one day, yes, I'm going to finance a couple of films that I will put myself in secretly. and after that, people will either send me scripts or not. You know, the market's going to decide. Like, if I ever come out in a movie where I'm not Brad Lee in the movie, I'm a freaking character. Well, go see the movie. If I'm freaking badass, say so. If I'm not, well, then I guess I got a good souvenir for the grandkids.
Well, and you got the Hollywood strike going on, so the door might be opening here for him, Gino. You never know where this goes. There could be some more openings here. So,
yeah.
Well, that Hollywood strike's peculiar timing. You know, you got these videos coming out of these celebrities and elites, you know, doing crazy shit. Mm-hmm. It'd be a good excuse to say that ain't me. That's a virtual, you know, version. That's an AI driven bullshit version. That ain't mm-hmm. me.
Nothing coincidental mm-hmm. here, right? There may be
deniability.
Yeah. Interesting. Did not think of that.
Brad, when you left acting, you went down. How did you come up with the idea of Lightspeed? How did you come up with that company? You're 30 years old. What was the genesis of that?
Yeah, well, that was when I was running a car dealership, and I was grabbing people off the street, turning them into badass salespeople. You know, I could drive through a Burger King, and if the person at the drive through was like nice, I'd say, "Hey, throw away the apron, fool. Let me show you how you freaking, you know, make some money." And then they'd show up, and I'd take a Burger King worker and turn them into a badass salesperson. I mean, selling cars isn't that difficult in the first place, but a lot of people didn't realize you could make 10, 20 grand a month selling cars every single month. Like, a lot of people are like, dude, no way. Oh yeah, absolutely. Even in the service department, like, you know, when you pull in to get your car serviced, like those people that come out look like just regular old mechanics or clerks, frick, they're mm-hmm. making 200 grand a year, 300 grand a year, selling you all the bullshit. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just had the ability to show people how to sell clothes and persuade people on the car lot. So I ultimately started doing it for the dealership I was working for. And there was this guy in the back making minimum wage. So I wanted to help him. So I pulled him up front and, you know, convinced him to let me teach him how to sell. And within 3 months, he was making more money than he's ever made. And I watched his whole family kind of perk up and change. And I thought to myself, you know, I want to help people make more money. I've got the ability and the knowledge to help people make more money. Now, 54 years later, you know, looking back, I also know that, like, my dad was a hard worker. He should have been rich because he worked hard and he did everything, you know, you're supposed to do. But he didn't have the right information. So between that powering me and watching this guy from the back come out front from minimum wage to about 15, 20 grand a month, watched his whole entire life change, his family change, his kids changed. Everybody got happier and brighter and more positive. So I said, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to start a training company where I'm going to go train people. And so that's what made me quit the job. And then when I started training people, it wasn't working very well in the first couple months. And I couldn't figure out why. And I realized there were four things that I was doing that now I forgot to do, or I didn't even realize I was doing them. And those four things are required if you really want to train your people. Most people aren't training their employees. They're training, you know, athletes. They're training the military, but they're not training employees. Employees don't get trained much. They get exposed, and there's a difference. So the four ingredients make that up. You need good content, the right way to do it in the first place. You need practice. You need repetition, and you need accountability. So practice, repetition, and accountability is mandatory if you're actually training somebody. And a lot of times these employees, they don't get repetitious training. They get sent through a class once and that's it. They're told to watch a video once and that's it. Like, that's not training. So once I realized that, I'm like, dude, I got to do this, but I can't do it out on the road because I'd be living at a hotel, because to get that kind of repetition and that practice and that accountability, I have to be there. So I thought, man, there's got to be a better way. And then there was this new thing coming called the internet, the interwebs.
WWW.
There were companies that didn't have websites. I remember selling websites back during this time where I told a company, if you don't have a website, you're not gonna seem legit. And that wasn't even true for another 8 or 10 years when I was saying it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was ahead of my time. I said, hey, how about the internet? What if we train people on the internet? What if I could, because when I went into a car dealership or a furniture store or wherever I was training salespeople, I'd say the same shit. I wasn't saying anything new every time. I was saying the same shit every time. And I said, why don't I just record this shit, put it on the internet, let them see it. Actually, at first it was a DVD. I can show you some originals. There's some, right? Where is that sucker? Right there. The real deal. You see where it says real deal in the back? Right
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
This right here is the first thing I did, CD-ROMs. But the problem is like there was no accountability and I couldn't see who was training and who wasn't. So I put these online and then hooked up the tracking and the measuring. But they had to be interactive because in person I'd ask questions and based on the answers I'd respond. So we built the first... Well, I don't know about the first, but no one else was doing this, I'm pretty sure. The first interactive virtual training system that was designed to train people online. So,
and that was Lightspeed.
That's Lightspeed, yeah.
And how old is this?
This was in, well, I mean, I started it in 1999. So
holy shit, I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah, by the time I went out and skidded a little bit and kind of burned my hands, I went, there's got to be a better way. And I went from selling those for about, let's say, 6 months to finding a company that could build me this vision I had. And that company, you know, it took me a while, but that company, I finally found a dude who's now still my partner this long later, but found a dude and he said, I don't think it's going to work, yada, 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 you know, the old story. But I just kept going and we made it work. And so now here we are 24 years later. I believe, and a lot of people credit me for being the father of the online moving or the online learning space, because this is 99, man. I don't know. I guarantee you there were no learning platforms that you could upload videos and train people with back then. We started it.
Dude, I was in high school. We were learning how to type with race cars, okay, in 1999. We're learning like literally how to, there was nothing like that coming through. And so just to understand completely, this was a you were trying to train salespeople initially with this and then saw the need in the marketplace, and this is how Lightspeed actually came to be, because you saw that need. Is that what I'm hearing?
Kinda. You know, I wasn't that smart. I built it for me. I put my training in it.
I
went out and started selling it. And so I was selling it successfully. I had about 50 or 60 customers giving me right around 1,000 a month each. And I couldn't get many more than that. And every time I knocked on a door, someone would say, we use, you know, Brian Tracy, or we use Zig Ziglar, or we use, you know, in the car business, it was Grant Cardone, Joe Verde, Tom Stuker, you know, Joe Girard. There was these names in the car business that already had traction. Nobody knew who I was. So when I would hear them say, well, we use this other trainer, I would say, what if I had their content on my
phone?
And they said, well, then we'd buy it. And I'd say, so you're telling me that if I go get these guys, like if I go get Grant Cardone's content on this, you would buy it? He says, absolutely. But you're not buying it if it's mine. Correct. They love Grant or Joe or whoever they were in love with. And so I just said, man, I got to either compete or collaborate. So I said, let me go close the guy teaching you to close. So I went and closed them all on using Lightspeed. And coincidentally, I already knew what they were trying to do, which was train people. And I already knew you cannot train people without good content, repetition, practice, and accountability. And I knew they weren't given repetition, practice, and accountability, because these little workshops and webinars they were doing, those don't offer that. So I knew they were having the same issues I was having. I knew they had problems, and I knew where their customers were, where potential customers were. So it wasn't very hard to go convince them. I walked up, I said, look at this system. I built it. It's for me. However, I'm running into people that want you. How about we take my name off and my content out, put your name on and your content in, and I'll go tell you where all these customers were, and then you can go sell it to the world. Wasn't that big of a sell. I mean, that's like
what was the deal though back then? Would they bring in a speaker, you know, on a conference call and rev the guys up on a Monday or something like that once a quarter? Or what was the training like at that point for these car dealerships? Were they just trying to get the guys in, or would they bring them in once a quarter live?
No, they'd hire somebody once in a while and show up. There was no calls. There was no Zoom meetings.
They weren't doing, well, I don't know if they were doing like conference calls or something, bringing the sales team in and doing something like that. So they'd actually bring them in live. Yeah, that's clunky. Wow, okay.
They'd come in for a two-day sales seminar or send us away to one.
Gotcha.
You know, and then we'd come back and everything would be hyped up for about a week, and then we'd go right back into our old ways. Anyone with a business with a team of salespeople know what I'm talking about. I mean, but now, again, we created the world's first interactive virtual training system, you know, and it's a system. That's the difference. A lot of people think they have online learning with their company, but they don't. They have videos online. Okay, and videos don't necessarily train you. Like I watch mixed martial arts, it doesn't make me a black belt. You have to have good content, repetition, practice, and accountability. And those systems don't offer that, which means it's not necessarily training. It's just exposing. And that's why it's not very effective. Not only that, there's no accountability. So you don't even know if they logged in, didn't log in, whether they trained, didn't train, whether they understood, didn't understand. Like you don't know much, right? So it's just a place to host a video and let people access it. Well, with a full-blown training system that's designed to give you multiple repetitions of the same information, okay, test you, track you, but it allows you to create interactive content from a regular video, which that was accidental almost, because I just demanded it had to do that. And the funny part is now the technology is starting to come out where you can make interactive videos with software. I've been doing it 24 years, and it's like theirs doesn't get tracked or measured. It's just clunky as hell. Ours is perfected. So it saves people hundreds of thousands of dollars in production costs and interactivity stuff. There's just so many ways it works. That's when it started growing. It's like I helped Grant build his. I helped Joe Verde build his. Then I got Zig.
How many years before it started growing, Brad?
What's that?
So you said it was about, I think you said 99 when you started, around 2000. How long did it take before it actually started growing, though, to the point where you started seeing scale with it?
Probably 2007 or 8.
That's a long time to stick with it.
Yeah, I wasn't really, you know, I swore that 90 days I was going to be rich. You know, when I started, I said 90 days from now, I guarantee I'm going to be a millionaire. I told everybody. 90 days later, they'd see me. You a millionaire yet? And I'd say, bro, I'm telling you right now, 90 more days, dude, everything is going to be huge. You know, because I had prospects and people went and haven't said no yet. And there was just like this pipeline filling up and everybody said yes. Nobody said no. Dude, I'm to the point now where I prefer someone say no than yes someday. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want someday shit. I want an answer. Like, do you want to do it or not? But because if it's a no, at least you can try and close it. If it's a yes, they're not objecting to anything. They're just saying, yeah, I'll do it. But, you know, in a little while. But anyway, so that's how I started that Lightspeed company.
And Brad, when did you realize that the brand is so powerful? When did you start building your own personal brand? Because you saw back then that Grant Cardone had his own brand. Zig Ziglar had his own brand. You have T. Harv Eker. You have, you said Joe Girard, which wrote a great book on
Dude, car. It was I love Jeffrey Gittimer book. Back then, Gino. Jeffrey Gittimer was the guy back then in sales. Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you realize it? When did you start building your brand?
You know, I helped a lot of these guys build their brand.
Yeah.
And I helped them build online revenue that is recurring. And so it's almost like poker chips. It's easy to spend. And I watched them spend it on advertising and on social media and building their brand, so to speak. So about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I just thought to myself, because everyone started following me anyway, because they were wondering, you know, who I was and why I was hanging around with this dude and that dude. So people started following me. So I one day just started making my own content.
What?
Here we are 5 years later. Now I'm a million on Instagram, like 2.5 million on TikTok. So probably four million altogether.
Wow.
4 million followers.
What's the long game with the branding? Where do you see it going and what do you want it to do for you?
The long game with the branding is to ultimately build trust with the world. And then you can sell them anything because they trust you. And, you know, they'll buy whatever you want them to buy or think they should buy because they trust you. Mm-hmm. So I just want to build trust. And I've been doing it for a long time. I'm pretty trusted, you know, but I also, the reason I should be trusted and I deserve trust and I warrant their trust is because I'm not going to sell them anything that I don't think can help them. So when I look at certain people across a spectrum, you know, I want something for everybody. So like, for example, people that aren't making at least $300,000 a year. Okay. I have started companies to where not only can I give them the training to make $300,000 a year, mindset, skill set, and the habits. Well, I've even created the companies to put them at. Mm-hmm. Because you already know it's a sales position. You ain't making a bunch of money unless you sell somebody something. So get over yourself. Well, I don't like sales. Dude, you've been selling yourself short your whole life, okay? You are a professional at sales. You're just not aware of it, okay? And that's the difference between good mm-hmm. salespeople and bad salespeople. The bad ones just don't know they're doing it. So the good ones, like, wake up and realize they're salespeople. So then they realize you can practice, drill, and rehearse things. You can get skilled at sales and closing. Like, you can become proficient to where the average person talking to you doesn't really, you know, stand a chance when it comes to the, you know, it's almost like mixed martial arts. Like, throw a white belt in with a black belt, 90% of the time they're going to get their ass kicked every time. And why do I say 90? Because there's always flukes and shit. There's always weird stories. But at the end of the day, if you want to, you know, become successful financially in any industry, you're going to need to focus on your mindset, your skill set, and your habits. So I ask you, if you're not making 300 grand a year right now, how they doing? How you doing? Now, some people could be like, you know, I'm doing fine. Money's not everything. And me. There's a mindset issue around money. See, they want to hate on money. They act like money's not the only way to succeed. Nobody said that. My question was, why are you making less than 300? And by the way, I don't know if people realize this, but you got to make at least 300 or more to get out of the rat race. Who wants out of the rat race? I'd love out of the rat race. Okay, well, how do you get out of the rat race? You got to make at least 300. Now, again, is there examples of people that didn't and still made it? Yes. Like I didn't, you know, make it because I made 300. It's the mindset, the skill set, and the habits that you make when you start making more. If you don't realize 300,000 is possible, you got no clue 3 million is possible. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's all mindset, skill set, habits. But the first group of people I want to help, I started these companies. I call them my real group of companies. And, you know, real training to where I can take pretty much anybody off the internet, you know, that's not doing that, put them through a training and a little program here, and then give them the job to utilize those skills. So I'd be that one example.
So it's almost like HR, or it's like recruiting for folks. You're bringing them in and then finding landing spots for them in a way. Is that right?
Well, again, technically you could look at it that way because all I would say on
social media, I'm not demeaning that or saying that's bad. I think it's great. I just want to, you know, understand exactly.
Well, even
what we're
if you did demean it, it wouldn't affect me at all. Cause like,
no, I didn't want it to come across like I was being a dick. Cause I think it's awesome.
You didn't. You didn't, but even if you were, I'd make you look stupid because who would demean trying to help people get out of the rat race?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, a dick, some sort of hater.
That's what I was making sure. No, it wasn't looking like an asshole, man.
No, I didn't take it. Like, you see the shirt real right here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a rhino right there. So real is the brand. When you say, where do you want to take it? I want to build the brand of being real, being authentic, getting real family, getting a real life, you know, making real money, finding real health, you know, real faith, like make your life real pretty much. I haven't fine tuned it and I haven't finalized everything, but that's kind of the gist. So now I can use my reach to help people, you know, make more money and get out of the rat race, which is coincidentally why I quit my job in the first place, man. I wanted to help people make more money and I got away from it because, you know, everybody else was wanting these people and these people. So I kind of got away from it and I quit training. All I did was help the trainers. You know, I built them stages and built them social media channels and helped them grow their training business, you know, and with all that experience, you know, now I'm looking back, I'm like, well, I started out to help people make more money, you know, and I made myself a shitload and we helped a lot of people through those trainers. So again, I kept justifying like, hey, well, I'm helping these people get trained from this guy. So it's still making them money, but there's a lot more I can give. I've just never given it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to probably drive a lot of this future into creating, let's just call it intellectual property to help people get out of the rat race. Now that's that group of people. Now you start to look, okay, 300 to a mil. You know, those people, they can't seem to scale. Well, again, 300 to seven figures. Okay, well, if you're in that category, well, now I'm going to probably drive you to something to scale your business so we can get you in the eight-figure box. Because real comfort comes with eight figures. A lot of people think seven figures is all the money in the world. That's not true. I used to believe that once I made $1 million a year, oh boy, I would have everything I wanted. And when I was young, I would always say, I'm going to be a millionaire. Now, what I thought in my head was really a decamillionaire or more. Because $1 million, if I gave someone $1 million, they probably would blow through it rapidly and it wouldn't change their life much after a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they had good financial sense, they could, you know, invest that $1 million at, let's say, on a conservative 10%, they'd make $100,000 a year additionally. Well, if they were only making $80,000 a year, well, now they're only making $180,000. That ain't mm-hmm. life-changing shit.
Mm-hmm.
You're not flying private on $180,000, brother. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I highly recommend flying private. See what I'm saying? Like, people can hate on this.
You're not flying private at 300 or a million either. So,
well, you're getting a lot closer, but no,
you get closer, but you're not there.
You are at eight figures. Like, I can fly private whenever I want. My problem is, I just can't still sometimes get past the cost.
Yeah,
it's like you want how much to go from where to where, and then you call first class seats, and they're like, of fraction. And I'm like, dude, they'll bring warm peanuts and shit and drinks. Like, you know, I don't
and the,
need
and the
to
plane's a lot out. Bigger. I know it's
yeah. Dude, so. just call me a blue collar mindset when it comes to that. Now, do I like doing it? Absolutely. If I had 10 times the money I have, would I do it every time, no matter what? Absolutely. 1000%. I highly recommend everybody do it. Mm-hmm. However, it's not realistic. So what can I do about it? Well, fuck, man. I can help people
can
get
make
out
more
of
money.
The rat race. I can help people get out of the rat race. I can instill confidence in men and show them how to be a man, because there's a lot of men out there. They don't even realize that they are men. Okay. They were brainwashed growing up in the wrong time. Okay. Like the last, you know, couple of generations, dude, they were brought up in a time where like there might be some woke agenda out there that we aren't even aware of. And they
we're aware of
graduated.
It.
I know, but like when I was in school, there was no weird ass woke agendas like that.
Yeah.
So now it's like almost like there's dudes out there that don't realize that they have more in them. Like they think it's almost like they were mentally castrated. Some of them.
What happens when you're 80? I mean, you're 90, and you have, you know, generations of this running the country. What that to me is like the breaking point where it can get really scary, because you need men to operate a society healthily and successfully. And so to me, I'm looking back saying it's fine now because I can take care of myself. I can take care of my family. But when you do get older, you need people that can, you know, maintain the roads, maintain the bridges, handle the infrastructure type stuff, do construction. And it seems like we're getting to a point in the next 50 years, if it keeps going on this trajectory, we're in a hell of a lot of trouble.
Well, here's
so what
prediction.
Gives when Brad's 80? What happens? You need more Brad's telling men to be men, I guess. That's the question.
No, I mean, when I'm 80 years old, you probably, the internet and the youth will probably just be told stories about me because I'll be disappeared.
He's going to the camps. He's going to the camps, baby. Yeah. He's getting yoinked.
No, I mean, I'm going to reach a certain point and then I'm going to, you know, sign off, you know, hey, good luck, y'all. See ya. see you in real life. Get it? Real life. Like I ain't fucking with the internet no more.
Yeah. So what's the prediction? You said there's a prediction. What's your prediction?
Well, see, that's why I interrupt people on my podcast, because I'll forget. Now you made me forget. We'd have to go back and talk about what we were talking about.
Oh, the prediction of the next 30 years. What happens when we're 80 years old and we've got people who can't do shit? They can't.
Oh, here's my prediction. My prediction is the trades are going to go up in price. So like you think a plumber is expensive now? Wait. Yep. You think a construction crew is expensive now? Wait.
It's going to be a luxury.
You think an electrician is expensive now? Wait. Because, dude, AI is going to take a lot of jobs, right? And it's going to create a lot of jobs. Mm-hmm. But let's see AI unclog your toilet.
Yeah, we're a ways away from robots doing that.
Let's see AI put a fucking, you know, landscaping at your house. It ain't going to happen. Like, AI is thinking, which is going to cause, you know, the work to be more expensive. Because everyone's going to make their money thinking. Instead of working, you know what I mean? Like people right now are literally creating social media content, getting 1 million followers and making $5 million a year doing nothing but making content. What do you think? They're going to go work. They're going to unplug your toilet. You think they're going to come put in a lawn? You think they're going to work? Hell no, dude. And more people are starting to make their money digitally.
They're gonna be working with a plumber that's gonna give you a video on Lightspeed and show
there
you how to do
it. There won't be any plumbers, dude. There won't be any. And the ones that exist will be able to get all the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Like, you want me to come over and do some work on your house? You better have a freaking check handy, because I'm probably the only one you're gonna find for the next 3 months.
Dude, Gina moved to Florida a couple years ago and he was talking about it there, especially through COVID. He couldn't get shit done on his house for the longest time. And now. You know, not
for a roof
50 years from now. So,
What, Gino, you didn't have a problem finding someone to put a roof on, did you?
I didn't have to put a roof on, but that was the biggest scam. And everyone's complaining about insurance. Well, all you assholes who scammed the insurance company and put a roof on and got the insurance company to pay for it, now that your insurance went up 60%, you're the problem. You're the ones who scammed the system. Now you're complaining. Don't complain. You stole. There was theft involved in that, and that's what the situation is. They made me change my hot water heaters because they were 15 years old. Really? They're working? They make you change them. So if you don't got the money, like Brad says, you've got a nice house, you think you got it made, then bills are going to be popping up. Let me tell you. Fucking don't get me started on that road. Brad, I want to ask you a question about a piece of content you made the other day, which I thought was phenomenal. You were talking about your W-2 job. You having to go back to it when you were working at Lightspeed. Can you share that story with me and with the listeners? Because I think to me, everyone thinks starting a business is great. You already said 90 days, but to swallow the pride and to go back and to get a job to continue your business is freaking awesome. I mean, that's what business is all about. It's all about grinding it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's also fairly easy to do because what's the choice? Like, let your business die? So the business wasn't making enough money. You know, at the end of the day, we got rid of everything we could get rid of. We were down to the bone. You know, and it needed money to operate. And if there was no money, well, then we're out of business. So I said, well, I guess I could go get a job where I make a couple, $300,000-$400,000 a year, and then I'll pay those bills through my job. And so that was the only option. So I went and got a job. I told the guy, listen, I'll come in here for 1 year. I'll work here 1 year. And he said, yeah, right. Like I wouldn't quit. Like I would quit after a year. He didn't believe me. Why? Because you can make good money. He's never seen anybody to this day.
What were you doing?
I was a GSM at a car dealership. Hmm. Just like right now, if everything crashed, you know, I could go run a car dealership right now and make $500,000 a year anytime I want to. You know, nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a little bit of difference, but like I could go take over a car dealership right now. Most of them, maybe not a well-ran one, but like a normally ran one, and double and triple its numbers just by getting back to the basics. Why? Because I know how to train people. There's no accountability at these stores. They let salesmen just sit around the front, smoke cigars, tell war stories, waiting for customers. Nobody has to turn anybody. There's no accountability. And they sell X amount of cars and they're making money. So they're like, ew, that was good. They don't realize if they'd have put in some processes, they'd have sold three times that many and made three times as much. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to get a job back in the car business. And by the way, that's why I say when people say, you know, you got to burn your bridges. Dude, you don't have to burn your bridges. Like, I didn't burn my bridges. Matter of fact, my bridges were what allowed me to jump. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew if anything went south, I could get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I'm like, why not? I can get a job if I have to have one. And sure enough, 4 years into it, you know, I had to have one. So I went and got one. I think it was 2004. I worked for 1 year to the day, quit on my 1 year anniversary. They wanted to send me to a couple of a GM school and run a store and then run a region of stores for this automotive group. And I said, no, I quit. They said, what? What are you talking about, dude? I was like the golden boy. You know, what are you talking about, man? I said, nope, I gotta go work for my company. I'm thinking, man, if I put as much time and effort that I did for you guys for myself, I probably wouldn't have had to do this in the first place. Because I really didn't, you know, go grind my balls off. I've never been a grind your balls off kind of guy. Why? Well, because I don't think you have to. Like, what happens if you die? What happens if you grind your balls off, you miss your family, you grind your balls off, then you die?
You missed. You like, struck out.
But why couldn't you? Why couldn't you enjoy a little bit on the way?
Mm-hmm.
You can.
No, you could. Can. What I'm saying you is, you screwed up bad. Like, you missed out on life completely because all you did was grind, and it was like probably low fulfillment.
Yeah, who wants
enjoyment.
That? Yeah. It's like you see these dudes. They're all buff. They got the abs. They got the perfect bodies and their six packs and whatnot. People don't realize that a lot of those dudes, they're not healthy. It wrecks you getting in that kind of shape, unless, of course, you do it correctly. So again, there's. I'm not saying that everyone with six packs is unhealthy, because here shortly when I start showing mine, I don't want everyone thinking I'm unhealthy.
You gotta have a piece of pizza every once in a while, man.
What I am saying is, you know, if this is a big if, the person with the abs spent their whole life skipping ranch dressing and you know birthday cake on occasion. I don't want to be that guy, man. I just already decided that. And I don't care what everyone else thinks about my decisions. I don't have allodoxophobia.
You guys know
what allodoxophobia is?
No, I think there's not a joke yet. Coming, but I'm not sure.
It's not a joke. You can Google allodoxophobia. Alexa, what is allodoxophobia?
Sorry, I don't have an answer for that.
They don't even know. Google it right now. A-L-L. Hey, Google, are you on a computer?
Yeah, I can pull it up. Hang on.
Google allodoxophobia. Allodoxophobia. It's the fear of other people's opinion.
No shit. I learned something today. It's like I've learned multiple things today. This is great. I'll never remember this word, but it is real. We're confirming it here. This is a real term, folks. All right.
Allodoxo.
It stands for the expression allodoxia is a fear of having other people's opinions. The fear of hearing, other people's opinions. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So allodoxophobia, dude, we're worried about what everybody else thinks and what everyone else's opinion is. It's like, and that a lot of times stops us from making moves that we should be making. So I am cured of allodoxophobia.
It's AKA Instagram-itis. You know, so-and-so's got this on the gram. So-and-so's got this. And, you know, we've seen that with a lot of the young guys that have come through organization too, with the get their itis stuff, because, you know, they're getting pressure from these social media outlets that they got to be, they're 25 and they got to be the same place as the guy that's 40. And there's some time to, you know, learn, and you're talking about, you know, what you're saying about learn, train, repeat, et cetera. And look, you sometimes got to go through it. It's not going to happen overnight, and putting the work in is okay. And so, you know, some of these young guys, man, just look, you're going to get there. Keep your head down, keep grinding. But, you know, you can also burn the organization out in the meantime by, you know, getting crazy with this shit. So,
dude, if you never arrive because you burnt yourself out, what's the value? All I'm saying is you don't have to grind your face off. Now, again, it's also subjective what grinding your face off is. Yes. People said the other day,
10 hours a day is not a big deal. That's not grinding your face off to me. So,
yeah, they said to me, Brad, what are you talking about? You grind your face off. You just said you don't believe in it. And I said, I don't grind my face off. And they said, dude, you're here every single day, 7 days a week. Yeah, mostly. Okay. And you're here from like 8 or 9 in the morning till 5 or 6 at night. And I'm like, banker's hours. Like, dude, there's a lot of life between, you know, there's a lot of life outside of 9 to 5.
Yeah,
people.
No shit.
I mean, there's people that could literally start a whole nother company, but not if I said to you, you cannot start a company between the hours of 9 to 5. Could you start a company?
We did. We started multifamily. So, I was at a restaurant and I got into multifamily.
Both of us were working full-time jobs as we were getting into apartments. So, we did the double dip. But then we pulled back. So, and there was times where fucking, you know, 15 hours a day. Didn't like it. Was pressing pretty fucking hard to get here where I am today. But now I'm able to work 6 to 6.
Yeah, but there were also some times that when you wanted to spend 3 extra days at the lake, you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, and then I just bought the house on the lake and I'm living here now. But yes, I agree with you. That's right. So, you know, that's
Jake.
There's trade-offs, but the point is you're not grinding your face off if you're spending 3 days at the lake. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what my point is it's subjective. Like some people be telling you, "Oh, you take 4 vacations a year, you're not grinding your face off." Well, I'm not claiming I'm grinding my face off. I'm claiming the opposite. Why? Mm-hmm. Because I watched my dad go through life grinding his face off only to have nothing financially. I always tell people we were so poor at Christmas one Christmas. He couldn't afford presents. So he just cut a hole in the pocket so I'd have something to play with.
Dude, come on, man.
He must be Italian, your father. My dad would put that shit to me, too. So, Jake, really, real important question for me before we go to the short answers. How did you cure yourself of allodoxophobia?
You know, I call that the sacred six, you know. And by the way, that's one of the things I'm going to bring these folks. I'm going to teach them how to at your event out there. I'm going to teach everybody there that wants to learn how to build a personal brand. Guaranteed if they just do it. The problem is most won't do it. So I have to literally teach them how to get rid of allodoxophobia first. Because if you do have allodoxophobia, you're not building a personal brand, folks. Sorry. You need to have some huevos. Now, women will be like, oh, that's rude. No, women can have balls. I know a girl that has bigger balls than any guy I know.
I know a few of them.
Only when balls mean courage.
That's now, right.
Why do balls mean courage? Why do balls equal courage? I have no clue.
It's been in the lexicon. Who gives a shit? We're not worried about that crap, right?
Bottom line is I wasn't at that meeting to vote that in. Like, to me, balls should be the opposite of courage. But like, balls just hang there and hope they don't get brushed.
And they hope they don't get hit.
Yeah, they're sitting there afraid of the wind. Like, you know, they're not very courageous body parts. But at the end of the day, I get it. So a woman can have balls, yes.
Love that.
All right, so...
By the way, I forgot to ask if we can talk like that on this podcast.
A little too late for that.
Gino's the nice guy. I'm sure he'll have it edited out. So when it comes to the allodoxophobia and the exposure, because you've been pushing your brand pretty hard, how do you deal with it? Because you're talking cancel culture, you're talking haters... And I don't care who you are, you know, because if you're Donald Trump, you know, you heard the stories about him who he doesn't like that stuff, but he deals with it. Right. And how do you personally deal with it? Because I don't know for a fact, but I'm sure you've had haters. I'm sure you've had, you know, people out there, you know, threatening cancel and things. And I'm sure you've had negative shit said about you online. That's almost impossible not to put yourself out there. So how do you personally deal with that? Because it sucks. I think Gino, myself, we've dealt with, you know, things before. It's not great. How do you personally deal with that?
Well, number one, you said, you know, you've been pushing your brand pretty hard. I don't push my brand. I'm about to. No one's ever seen me push my brand.
I'll bring the pain.
What's that?
I said, bring the pain. I mean, we've seen you out there. I think you're doing well with it. Yeah, so hats off.
That's not me pushing the brand. That's just me posting consistently.
Yeah.
I'm about to push. And that means, you know, I'm in your face, friends. And then people are going to get tired of me. People are going to hate me that don't even know me right now. But how I deal with haters is very simple. There's two things that I talk about. Number one, I remember this speaker that I knew that was 100% real. Nicest dude you ever want to meet. Does so good for the community. Does nothing but good for people, right? He's a great person. I was sitting in an audience one time. They don't know that I knew the dude. The dude walks out. The dude leans over and says, I hate this fucking guy. He thinks he's so fucking cool. And I'm looking at him like, how do you know him? And he says, I don't want to meet that prick. I don't know that prick. I don't want to meet that prick or some shit like that. I'm like, oh, you don't know him?
Yeah.
You don't know him? You don't know him? They said, no, I don't know him. I said, huh. And right there, it made me realize, you know, number one, you're never going to make everybody happy. No matter what you say, you're never going to make everybody happy. So if you're not going to make everybody happy, now you have to choose. Who are you going to make happy? Well, you could choose these people or those people, this person or that person. Or, and by the way, still be possibly in the wrong, still possibly screw up. There's only one person you can choose that you'll never be wrong. You. So it's like you realize, just make yourself happy. Quit worrying about the rest of those people. Like, dude, if they're not happy, whatever. Like, whatever. You're not here to make them happy. Your responsibility is not to make them happy. Like, dude, I post hoping that I'm providing somebody value. Then you get someone talking shit. I don't even look at it. Matter of fact, I snicker a little bit. Like, what an idiot. Like, you would take your time to go say something negative to a dude that's doing nothing but trying to help people avoid the same shit he stepped in.
I just can't believe these people got time for this shit. I don't know what the fuck you're doing all day.
You know, this guy's just trying to sell snake oil. It's like, bro, I don't know what you mean by snake oil. I can just assume that you mean bullshit. Because what the fuck is snake oil? Okay, now I don't sell snake oil and I don't even know what snake oil is. But when someone says, he's a snake oil salesman. Sounds like, he sells bullshit. Dude, number one, I don't sell no bullshit. Okay. Zero bullshit I sell. Okay. I can put money on anything I do against anybody. Like, there's nobody on the planet that can say I sell bullshit, period. And see, that's how you get integrity and that's how you have ethics. And next thing you know, that's how you can stand up and not worry about other people's opinion. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because I don't need your opinion to know I'm a good dude. Why? Because I am a good dude. And I'm a good dude when nobody's watching.
Yeah, and
that's how you get around oligodoxophobia. You become a good person even when nobody's watching, and you convince yourself you're fucking worth something. You want to raise your net worth, raise your self-worth.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty well said. I think it's definitely a challenge for a lot of folks out there. Gino, you ready to bring us home?
Hey, by the way, now I got to come up with all kind of new shit to come out to the talk with. You guys took all my best points.
You got to listen, man. You got to work it here. So, G-Dad, you ready?
Jake, if you give me a minute to I want to recap a story because it's an interesting story. I mean, at 16 years old, his dad tells him to get lost, to take a hike. He's got to go to L.A. He wants to star in some movies. He finds out that the movie business is just as corrupt and as the politics business. He sees the person with the money or with the gold makes all the rules. So he decides to himself, I've got to start making money. I'm going to be rich. Starts the company at 30 years of age. And every 90 days, he's telling people he's going to make some money. He's going to make money. But at the age of 34, he's got to swallow his pride. And he says, I got to go back to work. I've got to find a job. And for 12 months, that's all it takes. I'm going to take that 12-month job. After 12 months, I'm quitting. He quits at the age of 35 and continues along his path. And what I love most about anything, Jake, about the story is that he really created a product that brings tremendous value to the marketplace. He wasn't thinking about providing for his family. He wasn't thinking about becoming a millionaire. And because if he was, he wouldn't have been able to create this kind of business. I think people get into business for their own needs, not for the needs of their customers. And that's one thing I like about Brad's story is when he started Lightspeed, he was thinking about how he can build other people's brands and how he can help other people train. And he's learned from those lessons, from those years, he's building other people's personal brand, whether it's Grant Cardone, whether it's Zig Ziglar, whether it's, Joe Girard. And then he finally says to himself, I got shit ton to offer. So how do I do that for myself? How do I create my personal brand? And that's what he's gonna be doing at MM6, teaching you how to create your personal brand. And I think the integrity piece, looking within and saying, I'm gonna do what I say, I'm gonna say what I do. And even when Jake's not looking at me, I'm gonna continue to do that. And I think that oligodoxophobia is a funny word, but you gotta get over yourself. Life's too short to take yourself too seriously. And if you're out there just thinking about providing content for others.
Yeah.
Yes.
Damn. Yeah. That was well put, Gino.
The G.
Thank you, Brad.
Everybody.
Well, I mean,
believe me, I always listen nope, you got that wrong, but you got it all right so far, and you're 100%.
I've been watching you on what I love most when you put your stuff out there. You say most 98% of the stuff you say, I believe, I agree with you. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
What part don't you agree with?
Well, I give the 2% because there might be a fluke, right?
That's what I'm getting unaware of one. So why don't you say 100% until you find one that you don't?
Because it's the same thing with the black belt and the white belt. 90% of the time,
No,
just to volley back on that one.
That's why when people say, do you trust your wife?
Mostly. he said 90% of the time until a black belt steps in, then I got to step aside.
By the way,
all right.
Here's how you know. Do you trust your wife? Say, I don't know. Has she ever been to a Dan Bilzerian party?
Yeah, hopefully my wife doesn't know who he is, so we'll see. Right?
If your guys' wives know who he is and has been to his party,
yeah, she might have picked up she might have picked up ballodexophobia there, so you might want to get her tested, right?
Yeah,
fair enough. Hey,
listen, I'm going through the most entertaining book I've ever read.
Tell us,
it's called The Setup. The Setup by Dan Bilzerian.
You got it.
Gino's read just about everything. I don't think he's read that one.
I've not read that one.
Setup by Dan Bilzerian. It's a book this thick. I said, hey, I know a buddy that knows him. I said, get Dan on my podcast. He said, hey, Dan said he'll come on your podcast, but you got to read this book. So he sends, I buy his book, leather bound version of it. Nice ass collector's copy because Dan's cool no matter what. So I buy this leather bound book. It's thicker than the Bible. And I'm like, yeah, I can't like read that in a freaking sitting.
They got the audio version of it.
So I waited. And I'm like, I guess I ain't having Dan on the podcast because I'm not reading that damn tome. I'd be 70 years old reading that book. Then I saw it on audio when I was scrolling through the other day and I'm like, oh shit, there it is. I go, because it wasn't on audio when he told me. I hit the button, dude, I can't stop. Like, I want to get off this and hit play again.
Is this 72 hours? How long is the thing? It must be like,
oh, it's a long time, dude. And I'm telling you what, he's given you stories, and dude, I don't know if it's, I'll bet you a million, it's not trumped up at all. It's amazing. This dude's life. Like, again, I asked myself, like, I missed that, man. When I was young, I wasn't rich, you know, and now I'm a family man. So, like, you know, I don't enjoy having five girls at once. I wouldn't enjoy that. Now, you know what I'm saying by that? In other words, like, yes. I'm not claiming I'm an angel. Like, what dude wouldn't enjoy that?
There's a tipping point at 30, okay? There's a tipping point with males at 30. You get past 30, things change a little bit, all right?
That's what I'm talking about. It's like, dude, I miss those days, but I love hearing about them. I love listening.
Doesn't make it any less interesting.
Well, dude, he's talking about celebrities and people, and like Paris Hilton was over at his house a couple times, and like, he's just telling you these freaking stories that's like, no way can this shit be true. But it is true. And it is a epic life. Like, if he died right now, he would have a more epic life than people that live to 100. Mm-hmm. Like, he's lived more lives than 100-year-old men.
He was SEAL too, right?
That's rap. He didn't know.
He was close to being a SEAL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, man, that's why I brought him up. But go get that book. It's a good book, man. Done. You guys know I have a book too, don't you?
Yes.
Hit us with it and where we can get it.
It's called, well, sometimes I'll get a check, like, you know, for $620, and I'll be like, what's this for? And they'll be like, you sold some books. And I'll be like, oh, how many did I sell? Like, you know, 300 or something. They're like, you know, 20,000. I'm like, yeah, here's your, I got shekels. $600. Shit, that don't work. Amazon gets it all. You can go to Amazon and you can find it. It's called The Hard Way, but it's really officially titled Lessons I've Learned the Hard Way, so you don't have to. So if you type in The Hard Way, it should pop up. If it doesn't for some reason, which I don't think it will, it's called Lessons I Learned the Hard Way, so you don't have to. And the funny thing about my book is it's not this thick. It's about this thick. I think it's like 167 pages or something like that. When you read it, you'll know I wrote it, every word of it. And when I get down on the podcast, I'm going to ask him if he wrote every word of that book.
He did not.
He couldn't have. But if he did, again, another impressive thing that man's done. But I wrote my entire book. Every word's mine. You know, and the cool part about it is you're going to learn these lessons one way or the other. The question is how much is it going to cost you?
Mm-hmm.
And how long is it going to take you? Mm-hmm. So what I tell people is get my book, especially on the younger side. You know, some 55-year-old guy might read it and be like, yep, I knew all that. Okay, good. You know, what do you think? They'll be like, dude, it was freaking awesome. So it's helping everybody, but it's helping especially people that haven't really learned life yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like choosing money over relationships. You know, I use Grant Cardone's story for that. Like, when I first closed Grant, I made the deal with him. And the deal was, you know, based on I get a piece of his revenue. And I will show him how to do it and build him a system. And, you know, all I want is my little piece. I called it a piece for my niece, a fraction of the action, a tad for Brad.
If the glove don't fit, acquit. We heard about this today. We got it.
A slice because I'm nice. So he agreed. And then we went out and built a company that was doing $5 million a month. And then he didn't necessarily want to give me my piece. So he said, I'm going to give you half. And I said, like, hell you are. And then he said, well, dude, like, I paid you a lot of money. And I said, dude, I don't give a rat's dick. I'm growing quite accustomed to the monthly check side. So I chose the money, you know, and then that caused the stress in the relationship. And, you know, it ended up to where, like, you know, what I should have done was said, no problem, dude, no problem. You know, it's still a lot of money. You know, I've made a lot of money with you so far. Appreciate everything you're doing. I'm down with you, not the money, not the size of the paycheck. I'm down with you. It's the relationship I care about. Don't worry about the money. If I would have just done that, I would have made millions more than I've made. Now, did I do okay by myself? Sure. I'm not saying people can't survive by themselves. I'm saying I would have done better had I chose the relationship over the money. I chose the money over the relationship. And in a lot of times, we all do. And mm-hmm. and I say, if you choose money over relationships, soon you'll have neither.
Mm-hmm.
Did not know that. That's interesting. So, okay, we talked about Lightspeed a little bit. Last question. So if folks want the hub, where if they wanted to get into sales early on or they need help scaling, what's the best place to go?
Well, I mean, again, I haven't finalized all my programs because a lot of people think I sell these programs. I don't. You know, I run Lightspeed. I have real merchant services, you know, credit card processing, because everyone's getting ripped off in their credit cards. So I started real merchant services, give people jobs. They can go out and make recurring revenue. Recurring revenue is where it's at, by the way. But I don't run that, you know, but I just kicked that off. I got Real Financial. I've got Real Solar. I've got various companies to where when someone comes through, I can get them placed at a place where they can actually make that money. Because I can teach you how to sell and close and persuade. And if you go sell shit that you're not going to make 300 grand, you're not going to be able to make 300 grand. You know what I mean? Even if you're a good salesperson, it's hard to make 300 grand in some industries. Well, some industries, it's not hard at all. So I'm aligning those industries. So when I'm ready, and by the way, that's why when I said you haven't seen nothing yet, because I'm about to push my brand. I've never really pushed it because I was just building trust. I haven't really monetized it very well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on occasion, I'll do an event and boom, it'll sell out. And, you know, people pay me to come speak, like decent amount of money. So, and I've already done like 24 this year, I think. So it's, you know, that pays, but the personal brand pays like you wouldn't believe. But what it allows you to do is quickly build and scale companies. It's mm-hmm. the craziest thing. So what was your question?
No, I was just wondering, so for the folks that are listening, you mentioned the book, and I was wondering if there was a hub where, you know, folks want to find out more, if they want to get started with you, where they can go.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I don't really have anything to sell you, but you can go to bradlea.com and put your name on my list. That way, when I do have something to sell you, I'll be able to email you. Because what if social media crashes? What if they kick me off? I get canceled. You know, when you have those lists, well, now you can communicate with people even without social media.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is drive everybody to my Lightspeed platform or my email. That way, if social media kicks my ass off the internet like they have other people, I can still get in touch with the people that want to be in touch with. So if you want me to, you know, help you or you need help, go to there, put your name in. And go to my website. Anytime you wonder what's Brad up to, 9 times out of 10, it's on my website. It's either on my website or my social media. So follow me and hit me up at bradlea.com.
No, I think it's smart. You don't want to be in control, you know, by Meta and then have him fucking wax your ass. So, gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.